Now we have a change of pace. I was hoping there'd be at least one question that someone would ask. Thank you, sisters. I ask you to write large and dark so I can read. I'll do my best. In the actual text of the Apostolic Exhortation, 34 paragraphs, Holy Father says, "The consecrated life inspires and accompanies the spread of evangelization in the different parts of the world, where institutes from abroad are gratefully welcomed, and new ones are being founded in a great variety of forms and expressions. Consequently, although in some parts of the world, institutes of consecrated life seem to be experiencing a period of difficulty, in other places, they are prospering with remarkable vitality." Question: how does the Church view the idea of institutes in the United States importing vocations from those countries, say, India, Philippines, Poland, Slovakia, where there are reportedly many vocations? Thanks for the question. The Church encourages getting vocations from these other countries. While I was teaching at the University of Ottawa, during one lunch, I was sitting across from a priest, a student of the university, getting a doctorate in theology. He asked him, "Where are you from?" He said, "Nigeria." So I then asked him, "Well, that's kind of unusual, isn't it, for you to be here from Nigeria?" And that was some years ago. "Oh, no. I know there are now 11 priests in the city of New York alone, incarnated in the Archdiocese of New York, from Nigeria." In case nobody told you, the United States is a mission country. And talking to Superiors General of Community of the United States, he was just about given up on getting vocations, as many as we need for our apostolate, from the United States. So we get them from other countries, and the ones who are identified are safe. I would add, however, the United States does have vocations to the consecrated life, and good ones. But, and here's the hard adversity, but a genuine vocation, say, among young women, will be attracted to authentic religious life. And what so many young people see nowadays is not, what a safe statement, many authentic religious walk the streets of our country. In his morning's conference, you mentioned that there are many vocations to consecrated life. How do we, the handmaids, get vocations to be drawn to our community or even to respond? This has been on my mind, my prayers, over the years. Have you better get going? I could not think of a better year. Is this your 50th year? Well, you finished 50 years, right? Also my golden jubilee in the priesthood. Let's get going. First of all, you must be better known. Secondly, priests. I mean priests that want to be authentically priestly must somehow be in contact with your community, because most vocations, there are exceptions, but most vocations come through priests. Recognize a vocation, say, in a person going to confession, seeking counsel, and so on. How do you get vocations? While living, and I mean this, living a heroic, consecrated life. Before this retreat is over, I'll say more. Thanks for the question. It is crucially important. You mentioned in last night's conference about the hiddenness of the cloistered contemplative life. If we are to be hidden, how are we to get vocations? And the next question corresponds. How do we reconcile living a hidden life with the promotion of vocations? Among the most favored communities getting vocations are contemplative, even strictly cloistered communities. Of course, people must know who you are. But one of our problems in the United States is that, say, women in America brought up in a feminist culture, there is need, and I've said this both to your superiors and to others, there is need for, shall I call it, a program of training, call it pre-formation, so that women who have a vocation would learn something about the hidden life, a life of prayer. Love it and live it long before they would actually become members of, say, your community. The hidden life does not mean an unknown life. However, I repeat what I said earlier, your community should be better known, and your vocation is desperately needed in the world today. In connection with question number 18 of the Catechism, What is the heart? What is the heart? No. What is meant by the statement? They, the contemplatives, assure the continual growth of the younger churches and contribute to her interreligious dialogue. What is the Holy Father referring to when he says growth of the younger churches? These are churches where the Catholic faith has been only recently introduced. Say within the present century. And one pope after another, as the church through her evangelization becomes established in countries where there have been almost no Catholics ever, is to ensure there are contemplative communities, and even before the evangelization becomes, you might say, externally active. The contemplative life is the principal source of extraordinary grace in the church. And again, how do we contemplatives contribute to interreligious dialogue? Well, having over the years been so involved with other religions, not just the Protestants, but the Hindus, the Muslims. Over the years I've taught Hindus in India, long before I first visited India. I would be very happy to help you in this interreligious dialogue. Get the Protestants to know something about you. And, Lord willing, when I'm in India in November, very happy to distribute some of your literature. Let me tell you, some of these non-Christians, they do have, as we know, some measure of truth. They can be deeply spiritual. In other words, informing them about who you are, what you are doing, and well, writing or publishing. And I can do some, but getting your community to be known also in the non-Christian and non-Catholic world. Love the cross. Love the one who hates you. How can you love the cross when you see what it is doing to the soul of the one who is giving it to you? When I answer questions in women's communities, I expect subtle questions. Well, loving the cross obviously means embracing the suffering out of love for Christ, who was crucified out of love for us. Now, the very harm that say the person who does not love you, the very harm that is doing for that soul. Hear it and don't forget. You may be the one channel of grace that person needs to be saved. Your patient, loving acceptance of a person who does not love you can be, this is good Catholic theology, the means that God intends for you to win the graces that that person needs to convert and reach heaven. And the very harm that person, say, evil life is doing should inspire you to embrace the cross more and love that, pardon me, that bum all the more because he or she does not love you. I think I told you this at least on one occasion. My 4 years at Georgetown University, one of my fellow Jesuits, not once did he say one word to me, never spoke one word. How we need to love those who don't love us. In fact, nobody needs our love more than those who do not love us and are living very sinful lives. Saint Bernard, December the 29th, office reading. To show his kindness, what more could we do beyond taking my human form, my humanity? I say not Adam's. That is not such as he had before his fall. Does this mean that Jesus took our fallen human nature and all that that means? No. Christ assumed a truly human nature with all the consequences of our fallen human nature. Accept, let's be clear, accept sin and the proneness to sin which we all have. Unless Christ had assumed our full human nature, he could not have died, because as we know, our very mortality is a consequence of sin. What is the difference between a doctrine and a dogma? For example, doctrine, Mary's Immaculate Conception, dogma, Mary's Immaculate Conception. Thanks for the question. These are intelligent questions. Everything which the Church teaches to be believed by all the faithful is doctrine. The Latin word, of course, is doctrina. It comes from the Latin verb docere, to teach. Whatever the Church teaches that is binding on all Catholics to accept is doctrine. What is a dogma? A dogma is a revealed doctrine. A dogma is an explicitly, formally revealed doctrine. Our Lady's Immaculate Conception is that, shall I say, just a doctrine, or also a dogma? It's also a dogma. Where do you find Mary's Immaculate Conception? In Revelation. Implicitly in the Bible. That is why any Bible that, in quoting the angel's greeting of Our Lady, remember, in whose gospel, Hail, full of grace, a perfect theological synonym for Immaculate Conception is fullness of grace. Of course, supported by revealed sacred tradition. There are five doctrines about Mary, correct? I've never counted them. I thought there were more. How many dogmas are there about Mary? Any number. It's just, and we'll start counting. Mary's divine maternity is a dogma that she is the mother of God. Mary's Immaculate Conception is a dogma. Mary's virginity is a dogma. Mary's absolute sinlessness. Not only was she conceived without sin, she never sinned. Mary's integrity, which means Mary never had what we all sadly all possess, inclination towards sin. Mary never had an inclination to sin. I would say that every invocation of Our Lady in the Litany of Loretto, as we call it, is a dogma. Our Lady's bodily assumption into heaven. And by the way, be sure, any prayer book you use with a big, bright imprimatur, look up the Litany of Our Lady. Does it say, Queen assumed into heaven? It does. Here's a good Catholic prayer book. Doesn't say that. Don't even give it away. Send it to me and I'll get permission to pay you for the prayer book. Oh, I dread saying this, but say it I must. I think I've already told you this. The doors of St. Paul. I just hope they removed the prayer book which they published some years ago out of print. Queen in heavenly glory, instead of Queen assumed into heaven. Mary is in heaven with her body. That's a dogma. It's a dogma. There is a statement. I would say,